Someone would have had to help him with the longer words. Was it valuable?
Priceless.
Especially now it has been destroyed.
Ah.
It contained information of value, possibly involving the colour dark green. Will you tell me?
I could tell you, Havelock smiled again, but then I would have to find someone to pay me to kill you.
Then don't tell me. But I do think Dog Botherer is an unpleasant nickname.
When your name is Vetinari, madam, you're happy enough if it's merely Dog Botherer. Can you drop me off a little way from the guild, please? I'll go in via the roof. I have a tiger to attend to before I go up to, you know.
A tiger! How exciting! She stroked the cat again. You've found your way in yet?
Vetinari shrugged. I've known my way for years, madam, but now he has half a regiment around the palace, 4 or 5 guards on each door with irregular patrols and spot checks. I can't get through them.
Only let me get inside, please, and the men inside are no problem.
The cat pawed at its collar.
Is it possible that he is allergic to diamonds? Said madam.
She held up the cat.
Is you allergic to diamonds, then?
Havelock sighed, but inwardly, because he respected his aunt. He just wished she was a bit more sensible about cats. He felt instinctively that if you were going to fondle a cat while discussing matters of intrigue, then it should be a long-haired white one. It shouldn't be an elderly street tom with regular bouts of flatulence.
What about the sergeant? He said, shifting along the seat as politely as possible.
The lady, all in lilac, lowered the cat gently onto the seat. There was a distressing smell.
I think I should meet Mr. Keel as soon as possible, she said. Perhaps he can be harnessed. The party is tomorrow night. Do you mind opening the window?
A little later that night, Downey was walking unsteadily back to his study after a convivial time in the prefect's common room, when he noticed that a torch had gone out. With a swiftness that might have surprised someone who saw no further than his flushed face and unsteady walk, he pulled out a dagger and scanned the corridor. He glanced up at the ceiling, too. There were grey shadows everywhere, but nothing more than that. Sometimes torches did go out all by themselves. He stepped forward. When he woke up in his bed next morning, he put the headache down to some bad brandy. And some skag had painted orange and black stripes on his face. It started to rain again. Vimes liked the rain. Street crime went down when it rained. People stayed indoors. Some of the best nights of his career had been rainy, when he'd stood in the shadows in the lee of some building, head tucked in so that there was barely anything showing between his helmet and his collar, and listened to the silvery rustle of the rain. Once he'd been standing so quietly, so withdrawn, so not there, that a fleeing robber who'd evaded his pursuers had leaned against him to catch his breath. And when Vimes put his arms around him and whispered, "Gotcha!" into his ear, the man had apparently done in his trousers what his dear mother, some 40 years before, had very patiently taught him not to do. The people had gone home. The sewn-up gappy had been escorted to Old Cobbler's, where Fred Colon had patiently explained events to the man's parents, with his round red face radiating honesty. Lorne was possibly getting some use out of his bed. And the rain gurgled in the downpipes and gushed from the gargoyles and swirled in the gutters and deadened all sound. Useful stuff, rain. Vimes picked up the bottle of Mrs. Arbiter's best ginger beer. He remembered it. It was as gassy as hell and therefore hugely popular. A young boy could, with encouragement and training, eventually manage to belch the whole first verse of the national anthem after just one swig. This is an important social attribute when you're 8 years old. He'd chosen Colon and Waddy for this task. He wasn't going to involve young Sam. It wasn't that what he was planning was illegal as such. It was just that it had the same colour and smell as something illegal, and Vimes didn't want to have to explain. The cells were old, much older than the building above them. The iron cages were fairly new and didn't take up all the space. There were other cellars beyond an arch containing nothing more than rats and rubbish, but importantly, they couldn't be seen from the cages. Vimes got the men to carry the dead bowman through. Nothing wrong with that. It was the middle of the night. Filthy weather, no sense in waking up the people at the mortuary when there was a nice cold cellar.